be a man, and a man's got to learn to take it. Try to believe, though the going gets rough, that you got a hand tough to make it. History repeats itself, try and you succeed. Never doubt that you're the one.
So, nothing is ever going to keep you down, Tom.
Nothing, never.
This is a Cap Figure Podcast, episode 22. I'm Ryan DiPaolo.
Tom McLaughlin.
Hi, Tom. So,
in the house.
Episode 21, we're recording both on the same day, but we're going
to... Don't tell them.
Oh, never mind. This is a new day. This is the future, but I don't know what day to act like it is because I don't know what day we're going to put this episode out. You know, The View, I worked as a stagehand on The View, and one, I almost grew breasts instantly from all the estrogen in there. It was disgusting. But two, they recorded like three episodes in one day, and I my whole world was shattered. I was so depressed about it. I thought it was taped live every day.
That does shatter my world. It's like not even really, you can't even call it a view because if it's all done on one day, how can I trust their view?
And they all use heavy flow diapers. I thought they would use like more classy stuff. So anyway, that was a really bad joke. So it's the Cap Figure Podcast.
We're here.
Last episode, we talked about the collective bargaining agreement, and this week, we're not really going to talk about the Sox, but we're going to talk about Yoenis Cespedes signed a deal. We're going to talk about Andrew McCutchen might get traded and some other free agency stuff, and then we have some bad articles to explore. You know, we explored the collective bargaining agreement last episode. And it's interesting how the players may be misguided in their excitement about getting the compensation pick, like...
eliminated.
They bargain that to be eliminated or whatever. Yoenis, I'll stop being from Boston now. I'm a Mets fan, as maybe someone know. And they got him for 4 years, $110 million. And Mike Francesa, our god, so expected it to happen that he said, quote, I'm not even going to give the Mets credit because they just had to do this. And part of me agrees, but it still feels exciting because when they traded for him 2 years ago, they said, Sandy Alderson said, we don't expect to re-sign him. So the fact that last year we got to get him back, even though it was on the 1 year, 3 year deal with a 1 year opt out, it was all icing on the cake for me as a Mets fan. And then now to actually end up with him at a price that I'm happy with, and we only have to own him until he's 35. This is awesome. And as Mike Francesa again points out, but I don't need him to point it out, but I just give him credit because he's my god. You already have eliminated the Jason Bay factor, which is that like you can't perform in New York, whatever percentage that is. He thinks it's worth a lot of millions. I think it's worth whatever, $5 million. But the fact that you eliminate that they can't take the pressure or like carry an offense, quote unquote, he's so clutch last year. He's great. What do you think of the signing?
Yeah, a couple things. So one, I think in episode 20 or 19, I think we kind of predicted this. I think the Mets
That he would stay with the Mets?
Yeah, and that was my gut reaction. That's sort of what I felt all along, especially after last offseason he took less money from the Mets or a different structure from the Mets as opposed to like going to the Nationals and getting a little bit of a bigger contract. I think it's a huge win for the Mets. And yeah, I mean, I was expecting it. Mike might say the Mets had to do it, but they didn't have to do anything.
No, they could. There were reports that were looking at JD Martinez. There were, you know, they could have done a bunch of different things. They could have used the excuse like we thought when they traded for Jay Bruce that they were just going to maybe sit on him and try to hodgepodge an outfield other ways or something.
And I mean, look, 4 years, what is it, $110 million. I think that's the second highest average annual value for any position player. I think it's only less than the contract that Alex Rodriguez signed, and I think it may be currently less than Miguel Cabrera. So second highest average annual value in the game right now,
maybe Giancarlo, but whatever.
But yeah, I mean, this kind of comes full circle, right? Look, the narrative on Cespedes has changed so much. When the Mets traded for him at the trade deadline in 2015, there were a lot of questions about this player, right? He had been traded from the Athletics to the Red Sox.
To the Tigers. Well, the Tigers in between, no?
Yeah, and then to the Tigers. Then he got traded from the Tigers to the Mets for Michael Fulmer. Yeah, he was kind of just shipped all around, right? Bad attitude.
But I wonder, I mean, I feel like it was maybe just like bad luck. Part of it was maybe whatever about his character or something. But I think mostly it's just us deducing that because it's rare to see such a good player move so often.
Well, yeah, that's what I was kind of getting at is, like, you know, there were all of these negative narratives, but really when you look at his performance and you look what he's meant to the Mets, I mean, that trade in 2015, yeah, you don't like to give up Michael Fulmer, who just won the Rookie of the Year, but the Mets do not make the World Series if they don't have him. This past season, the Mets, look, their pitching staff was absolutely decimated.
Yeah,
Syndergaard
no
was
way.
Probably the team MVP, but Cespedes, I mean, that team is a losing team this past year if they don't have him, and they made it to the wild card game. You can't overemphasize what this player means to that team. And, you know, I'm excited for you as a Mets fan. I'm excited for the Mets as a whole because this is probably the most exciting player the Mets have had in a pretty long time since, Jose Reyes burst onto the scene.
Exactly. Since that year, like the David Wright, Jose Reyes time, especially because they were young. But then before that, like Mike Piazza, like this is an offense carrying guy. And like I said, this is all bonus. I mean, for me, I never had the attitude that a lot of like sports radio callers here in New York, I heard in even during the 2015 postseason, they were saying we have to re-sign Cespedes this postseason, blah, blah, blah. The Mets can't be cheap. They're so afraid of the Mets not spending money. And like I said, that they had said that we don't expect to be able to keep Cespedes. And then for some reason, the market was much lower. Well, I have a bunch of theories I'll get to in a minute. And then they were able to keep him and now re-sign him. So, but the thing I didn't mention yet is that we did the episode recently where we looked at the predictions on contracts of free agents. And he got a little bit less, and we both thought he would get more. They thought that he would get... The average of the predictions was 5 years, $24 million a year, so that it ended up being between $118 and $125 million for a five-year deal is what they thought. And you and I both thought he would get more. You know, he's 31, like, and he had a WAR of 6.3 in 2015 and 2.9 last year in only 132 games. But I have some ideas on why he got less, but it still surprises me. What do you think?
Yeah, I think that the Mets getting him back and the Mets only committing or being able to get him back with only a four-year deal, that's just a huge win. I don't know for a fact, but I'm pretty sure that the Dodgers would not have been crazy to offer him a five-year deal. I think, yeah, you said he's 31. I think, to me personally, if I'm a GM, I think he was definitely the best player available in free agency, definitely the best position player available, the most impactful player you could bring into a lineup right now. I think if the Mets weren't able to re-sign him, no matter who they could get, whether it was J.D. Martinez or, I don't know, I mean, like Carlos Gomez, anyone, it's just such a huge downgrade. I think that the one sort of theme... Well, there's a couple things, and I know you said you're going to get to it, but the one thing that kind of sticks out to me and that I'm concerned about is not necessarily his work ethic or the fact that he loves golf. The thing that really sticks out to me is he is a great hitter, but it is very clear that a huge part of his game and the reason that he is able to excel at such a high level is because of that just absolutely outrageous athleticism, and that is something that when you start hitting those later years of the contract, you know, it might be a case where he falls off dramatically in the last year, but you always kind of know that when you sign one of these contracts.
Yeah, well, that's why, so I'm gonna steal the mic for a minute. But yeah, no, this is what I was going to get at. Like, so here's my theory, and give me one moment. But I think that, like, so you had the A-Rod. This is like the history recently of these giant per year deals. That we saw the A-Rod and the Pujols deal be so bad so quickly, and these teams are stuck with so much money, and it's so terrifying that, like, there may be an overcompensation in the market now, maybe. And maybe the Mets are taking advantage of it. Also, I looked up the top 25, like, highest salaries from last year per year, and I'm going to read off them, in a not boring way, but it's A-Rod, Chris Davis, Jacoby Ellsbury are 25 to 23, Jason Worth, Carl Crawford, Adrian Gonzalez, Jose Reyes.
Wow.
Justin Upton. I'm going from 25 up to 1.
Oh,
so,
okay.
So far we've done all position players, and all of them are on bad deals. Every single one of them did not deserve the amount they made last year. Maybe you could say going into the season, Justin Upton would have been. None of them have been worth it. And you'll notice that almost every pitcher I mention is about worth what he got, which is surprising because, in general, I would have said always I'd rather have the position player. I'd rather, sign the everyday player, but and that pitching is more fickle. So I'm up to number 16. Max Scherzer, Hanley Ramirez is number 15. Joe Mauer, $23 million.
Wow.
Mark Teixeira, $23 million. Cole Hamels, but right, he's overpaid a little, but he's still contributing. So the only two pitchers so far, I'm up to number 12, backwards from 25. Scherzer and Cole Hamels both were in contention for their Cy Youngs, and one won it.
Yep.
Robinson Cano had a great season last year. CC Sabathia, he's the one pitcher who's not been worth his money, but in the life of his contract compared to the position players, the fall-off has been less great, I would say, maybe, because they're not stuck for as long. And on the top end, it's a $300 million contract versus a $160 million contract.
Right.
Next is Felix Hernandez, Miguel Cabrera, and Justin Verlander are tied. David Price, Zach Greinke, and Clayton Kershaw. So, it's really surprising. This is the opposite of what I would have guessed. I skipped, tied for seventh with CC Sabathia, is Ryan Howard, Albert Pujols, and John Lester.
Wow.
Like, that just brings the point home even more. They're tied all at seventh. That Pujols and Howard are just, like, on horrible deals already. Isn't that surprising?
So you're basically, from that list, just off the top of my head, off like a guess, I would say 80% of those pitchers earned their contracts last year, and the only ones that really didn't were, you have CC Sabathia and Felix Hernandez, who Hernandez performed at a higher level than CC, but both of those deals had less to do with what they expected performance-wise at this point in their career.
Yes, that's such a good point. I just real quick, I forgot, tied with Jose Reyes at $22 million is Masahiro Tanaka. I didn't mention him.
Okay, so that's just another pitcher throw in that is absolutely earning that. Okay, so yeah, there's a couple of things that really shocks me because, the position players, half of them I wouldn't even want on my team as a starting player, regardless of what the salary was. Like, half of them shouldn't even be on, like, a pro roster anymore.
Two of them were cut, Jose Reyes and A-Rod. One was designated for a side. Carl Crawford was cut, right?
Ryan Howard.
Howard is just barely holding on because he hits home runs.
So what do you think? I mean, I think one of the natural things, and I think this sometimes it gets brought up, but it's really not fully taken into consideration, is, look, if you're a player and you get a big contract like this, I don't care who you are. There's probably 10% of players who maintain the same work ethic or just naturally wired that way, who want to be Hall of Famers, who, like John Lester, for example, is someone that comes to mind who just, he, no matter how much money you give him, he's just going to kind of be the same person. But for so many of these guys, you're going to probably not work as hard. You're probably not going to put in the same amount of effort that you're going to this year, as opposed to the year before you signed as a free agent. And arguably, you know, like these players who are getting up there in age, you need to be working that much harder to like maintain your body, to make sure you're eating right, taking the proper precautions.
Teixeira went gluten-free last year. That couldn't have been easy, and he had a good year.
I mean, he's another example of someone who I think the money had less to do with it. He was just naturally, like, driven. But, I mean, they all obviously are, but there is, you know, there
is... whatever
is,
the reason.
Yeah, whatever the reason, that is very shocking to
isn't
me.
Isn't it? Like, yeah, and maybe part of it is, like, because it's not a giant list, and maybe some of the pitchers are... earlier in the but not really. No, all the only Max Scherzer, Tanaka, like, are in the earlier stages of their contract. But like Verlander and Miguel Cabrera, like, both got their deals around the same time. Verlander just should have won the Cy Young, and Cabrera is like the 15th best hitter in baseball now, after both being the best at their positions. But it's so reverse of what I would think, because on if you took an average, really good. If you took an average, like, two-win third baseman and an average two-win, let's say one win, an average one-win third baseman and an average one-win starter, if you showed me their next, like, 5 years and they're both at the age of 29, I would guess that the more fickle performance would be from the pitcher. Because it seems, and maybe this isn't true, maybe I'm going to find out the more I read about it that I was just wrong in my impression, but it seems to me that the performance of position players is more consistent year to year than pitchers are. But I mean, that list is crazy. And also, it's about the years. And I think this may be where the Mets, why I'm so happy with the Mets deal, is that they only paying till he's 35. So many of those deals, they're paying the guys till they're much older than that.
No, and you're absolutely right, because if you think about it just from a math perspective too, right, a pitcher is pitching in 35 games per year, whereas a position player is playing in 162. So there's obviously like less variance, and the position player you think would be more consistent over a greater sample size. The other thing is with pitchers, like the velocity, a smaller injury can impact a pitcher way more. So yeah, that really shocks me. And hitting is, you know, a lot of it has to do with, you know, the bat speed, you know, just like the physical ability of the player. But hitting, for example, like it's more of an art than anything, and being able to sort of study, anticipate pitchers' tendencies. I mean, pitching is sort of the same way, but velocity, I think, overrides. I would say physical ability and velocity is more important to a pitcher than
Yeah, just gut raw power to a hitter. And right. that would lead you to think that it's better to give a big hitter a contract, right? I mean,
absolutely.
But I guess when you account for, like I've said, the top pitching contracts are $160 million over the life, and the top hitter contracts are $300 million over the life. Like, I guess when you account for the gap in that it makes up for it. But like I said, I have this theory that I guess everybody is so afraid to be stuck with an A-Rod contract or something like that, or an Albert Pujols contract. Like, look at where the Angels are, in part because of that. That maybe there's like a reluctance to give the years to Yoenis Cespedes. Or maybe all the GMs just saw that list. They already know that list that I just read. They're like, all right, there's a race to give this guy $27 million a year. I'm not giving him 5 years, because look at this list. Like, it's better to give a pitcher the money. So,
but yeah, that's a great point. I mean, Cespedes is the best player on the market, and you can't tell me that in, say, 2011, he would not have gotten a 7-year contract.
No, because look at, like, Justin Upton was younger, but even, like, what's his name?
Ellsbury got a 7-year
Ellsbury,
contract.
Yeah, Ellsbury's on that, and he had only had, like, one really great season.
Yeah, he had a very inconsistent track record.
And
he
injury
was
prone.
Injured all the time.
Absolutely.
And, I believe that, so he's 33 now, and he signed that deal in 2014. So he was 31 at that age too. 7 years, $153 million. Less
Seven
per
years.
Year. But if you look at comparably, it's sort of the same, I would say, annual value.
Yeah, but it's $40 million more in the extra years. Like,
no, absolutely.
Yeah, yeah.
You look at the 3 additional years, I mean, that is crazy.
And a player who relies on speed probably, even though you're pointing out Yoenis's reliance maybe on raw power, even though he's learning how to walk a little more and stuff, somebody like Ellsbury, who relies on speed, is way more dangerous a candidate to fall off than Cespedes. But yeah, that's why I'm so happy with the deal, that it's only 4 years and that they were paying more. I remember Yankee fans, when Cano was getting ready to leave, like that deal, even though he had a great rebound season, and I love him, you know, he's my favorite swing I've seen of all time, but that contract will be bad pretty soon. And I mean, hopefully not, but it's super fascinating on the highest end.
It will be bad soon, regardless.
It's a matter of fact. Yeah, you're right. No, it's a matter of fact that it will be bad. And, you know, you're not going to see, I don't think, maybe you'll see a rebound year. I guess the Justin Verlander rebound year with velocity is way more rare than the like Mark Teixeira or A-Rod 2015 rebound year.
Right.
So that's the counter argument. But again, the gap in the amount of money over the life of the contract makes up for it. All right. So we're gonna move on. But one other signing, like Edison Volquez, the Marlins signed him. He has a weird hairline. I don't like him.
One thing I was just gonna say, you can think about this, right? If you look at, would you rather have Yoenis Cespedes for 4 years now for $110 million? You want to hear something that's crazy? Guess who's making $102 million through the next 4 years? I mean, I'm not really
giving
you
a hint. Are they an outfielder?
He's an outfielder, and he plays for the Texas Rangers.
Nelson Cruz. No, I don't know.
Shin-Soo Chu.
Ha! Wow, and he's funny because he's like an on-base machine. Like, he seems like somebody who was not a candidate to fall off. Yeah, that's a great example.
But that is crazy. So I think it's overall a huge win for the Mets. I think he wanted to be here, so.
Yeah, it's not. I'm very happy that the Mets did it.
Let's keep the yellow armband going.
Yeah, bro. He needs to change his song. The Lion King was cool, like when he hit the walk-off home run and stuff. You know, his song when he comes out is "Yes again,
oh, yeah.
Yes in a nina nima."
The King is back.
What would your song be? The Masahiro Tanaka, the ding 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 ding, the Japanese like anime stuff.
Yep.
All right. So the other bit of news or interesting hot stove stuff is Andrew McCutchen. Is like all these reports are saying that he is a trading chip, that the Pirates are willing to trade him and looking to trade him. He's set to make $14 million in 2017, and he has a club option in 2018 of $14.5 million. I found some articles that were saying like the Nationals are a good fit or some, and they can move Trey Turner to shortstop, which is really interesting. But before that, I just wanted to point out that he had a negative .7 WAR last year. That's crazy for the MVP, and he hadn't legitimately, he deserved it. He hadn't missed an All-Star game before last year since 2010. You know, he had obviously an MVP in there and finished top three in the MVP voting like four or five times. But his D WAR last year was negative 2.6, and his offense was still a little bit better than average for center field. So what you think?
Yeah, I mean, factoring into those numbers, he had a very rough start to the beginning of the season.
Last year, too, 2015 and 2016.
I think, if I'm not mistaken, he had some sort of hand injury, which, I mean, that obviously impacts the swing of a hitter. I'm not necessarily as concerned with his performance. I will say I'm kind of shocked because, look, there's a huge difference between the player being on the trade market and the team actively trying to trade him.
Yes.
So the Pirates are actually calling people trying to trade him.
You mean,
right?
That's much different than like, oh, I'll hear you out.
Exactly.
Yeah.
And so one, what that tells me is he's going to be traded, because now that he knows that the Pirates want to trade him, I don't think it's a huge secret anyway, but I mean, you really can't like repair that relationship.
The Pirates have a horrible reputation, too. Before McCutchen and Gerrit Cole and all these guys, they were the example of a team that just pocketed revenue-sharing money and didn't really give out contracts. They have a low payroll. Gerrit Cole made less money last year after the year before.
Yeah.
And they could have just given him a goodwill, a baby. They could have given him $100,000 more, and he would have been happy.
Like $10,000.
But they're too cheap. Yeah, they're not a well-regarded franchise with players. That hurts you in the long run.
So How much did you say he's owed the next 2 years? There's a team option.
Yeah, $14 million 2017 and $14.5 million club option in 2018. So, I mean, taking that into consideration, if the Pirates know they have no intent on re-signing him after that, the fact that it's only one or two more years, depending on his performance, it makes it more like edible for me, or whatever the word would be. But it still seems like you're giving up when you could have had a good season last year. Like, you're close.
Yeah, well, the thing with the Pirates is they can have a very viable outfield without McCutchen. Starling Marte should be a center fielder, so they can move him to center field.
Yeah, that's a good point.
They have this prospect, Austin Meadows, who's going to be up next year, assuming they trade McCutchen. He probably will be either way. He could probably move into right field where Marte is now. And you could still probably have a great outfield. I think this all kind of makes sense for the Pirates. The thing that just really kind of strikes me is, like, he's coming off easily the worst season in his career, right? And it's hard for me to believe that he is as bad as he was this past season. I don't think we'll see him be an MVP again. But to me, just the timing does not seem ideal for the Pirates. Look, if they're having to call people to trade what was considered one of the top five position players in the league coming into the season, that's just not a good sign.
No, and also, like you said, I'm not a scout, but, like, that is a red flag that if, I mean, maybe they're asking a very high price for McCutchen as if he's still great, but I'm not a scout, so therefore I don't know what reasons for the decline in his performance, but I would assume, unless the Pirates are asking a ridiculously high price, that they would have to be somewhat alarming to some other GMs, because if somebody as good as McCutchen, even if they think he can rebound to 3/4 of the player he was, or 2/3, you would jump on that. You would pay a super high price for him because he's amazing. He was an MVP, center fielder. So maybe I'm reading too much into it, because maybe, again, you can assume the Pirates are asking for outrageous stuff in return. But it also is stupid to be trading at an all-time low of value. But maybe the Pirates see something that we don't, that he's legitimately just taking a downturn. But I can't imagine, again, like you've said, that his value will stay this low. It has to come up a little bit. At worst, he's not going to stay in this low in value if you wait into the season.
I think you're onto something, because there's so many factors that come into consideration when you're valuing a player. One, there's obviously the performance. There's the historical track record. There's what raw tools he brings to the table.
He cut his braids.
His work ethic. His contract. If you look at those 2 years, there's a lot of surplus value. If he performs even at 80% of what he was, you'd probably have to pay something like 22 or 23 million. I mean, if he was what he was, you'd be paying 30 million on the free agent market this summer. The other thing is, when you look at a player like McCutchen, he was like the first star that the Pirates have had in a long time. He was like the fan favorite. Everyone rallied around him. I mean, he was just so cool. He was the first Pirates player that I think fans in Pittsburgh for a long time have been like, yeah, that's like, he's our guy.
Right.
I'm pretty sure everybody bought McCutchen jerseys. So what that tells me, and which is like just an obvious fact, is if, let's say, McCutchen gets traded to the Yankees or the Nationals, he doesn't have as much value to that franchise, because, you know, Nationals fans are going to buy Bryce Harper jerseys. So to me, McCutchen has a ton of value and like goodwill to the fans of Pittsburgh. So for me, for them to be moving him.
Oh, yeah, I get what you're saying. That means it's even more drastic than we may think. That's a really good point. He definitely means more to them than he would mean to a team like the Yankees or Blue Jays. They're talking about getting him.
Because why would they not even just wait until the trade deadline, hope that he can turn it around a little bit, and then trade him? I mean, there's, you know, teams aren't going to give you that much extra value. Let's say he has not a great season this season. I mean, teams aren't going to give you that much less at the trade deadline than they would at, say, you know, right now.
Well, right. I guess you could say that they're hoping to get a full year, because if he performs better, then the longer you have with this good deal is better. And also, it could turn out being only 1 year. I highly doubt that the club option will be turned down for 2018, even if he has a one-win season. He's Andrew McCutchen. He has enough clout that you would take the club option on him for 2018. Or maybe reject it and give him a qualifying offer. So anyway, let's move on. So we only have 10 minutes left, but there are some horrible articles. We were trying to look up some really stupid hot takes. You just found one that's what is it? The top 10 what?
It's the 10 mind-numbingly stupid sports narratives. And
give me some.
So the first one they have here is the must-win game. And what this is kind of talked to is in the context of when you have a seven-game series, right? And
yes,
you see this
is
a lot in the
favorite
NBA. And let's say the Knicks and the Nets are in a seven-game series, and the first two games are at Madison Square Garden. So the Knicks win the first game. Then the next game, they say, oh, the Nets, this is a must-win game. Well, I mean,
I've literally heard Michael Kay say this, and this is, I'm at Horrible Stats on Twitter, and this is a quote in my new tagline, but Michael Kay literally said this. He goes, tonight is the crucial game because when teams are tied 1-1 in a seven-game series, the winner of game three goes on to win that series 85% of the time. He's also said, strike one is the most important pitch of the at-bat. To get ahead 0-1 is very important. Both of those things couldn't be rooted in more silly misunderstanding. I cannot fathom that a 10-year-old with the most basic understanding of correlation and causation are not the same thing could tell you that you should win 80% of the time if you're up 2-1, because you only need to win 2 more games, dingus. All right, give me another one.
Yeah, so there's not that many gray ones on this, but another good one is the elite quarterback. And so, you know, people kind of throw this around and they're like, who are the elite or franchise quarterbacks? And so then you kind of get into listing the actual number of quarterbacks. And I mean, then you end up with what? You've got anywhere between 12 and 14, you know? Because if you actually do list them off, and I'm not going to, because we all kind of know who they are. I mean, it's a lot more than you think. So there really is no elite, you know, you could say that about any number of these 12 guys.
Right.
David Carr is elite. Marcus Mariota at this point is elite. But, I mean, no, they're not. Tom Brady and Aaron Rodgers are the two best quarterbacks. Period.
All right.
So that one's not that good.
So that's good. You had another one about robot umps. I found one. I found one that's a headline where it's MLB, don't take the human element out of baseball with robot umps. And then it's some editorial from some guy from Indiana talking about, how the human element connects all of us. And then he starts talking about robots one day serving us our fast food. It's this guy is afraid of iRobot with Will Smith, just like Mike Francesa is when they say it'll take the human element out.
Artificial intelligence.
It's sort of too easy of an argument to even pick apart. So I guess I'll just summarize it like that. But do you have Brian Gumbel's quote?
So here's something interesting. So Yale professor Toby Moskowitz, the co-author of Scorecasting, studied nearly 1 million major league pitches and found that even the best umpires are missing one of every four pitches on the outer 3 inches of the strike zone, which is a lot. A number that increases to 1 in 3 on the outer 2 inches. That's obviously enough to change about anything. And so Brian Gumbel, who is obviously a very well-respected sportscaster, says the following. If you're going to tell me it's more important to get it right, I'm going to tell you that's not true. It's more important to maintain the integrity of the game.
that's the greatest quote of all time. It's like, and, okay, I didn't know, like, steeping to getting it right is lack of integrity.
Bob Costas obviously, like, responds to this, and in probably the best way you could. Integrity is getting the calls right.
Yeah,
and,
Bob.
I mean, that is obviously exactly what it is.
Yeah, Bob. I like that. All right, we gotta wrap it up, but just a headline. The Diamondbacks still have one of baseball's most compelling rosters. Compelling is the hot, is the best. Compelling is like using the term X factor in analysis before a game. It could mean anything. It's like they're compelling because they suck. It's good hot take clickbait. But I mean, we'll look for more bad articles. You could just go to Mike Lupica's website and find every article he's written, and they're horrible.
The other one was, I mean, the one that I actually sent you that you tweeted out. Did you mention that about
hockey?
No,
go ahead.
Yeah, it was unbelievable. So I'm on Twitter, reading through like all these like rants of people about like stupid stuff on sports, and then I come across this article, and I had to double take because I was like, really, is that the actual title? And it was something along the lines of, shooting percentage increases the number of goals scored.
Right, right. NHL teams like, we can score more goals if we shoot more. It was laughable.
Kidding.
I tweeted it out at Horrible Stats, and Tom has it.
It's just like being a winner.
Yeah, it's amazing. I love it. So yeah, you know, that's it. We gotta wrap it up. All right, yo, Cap Figure Podcast, it's on your iPhone. It's like the purple or pink or whatever color you want to call it podcast app. Please leave a review if you like it or you don't like it, or subscribe if you like it.
Or you don't like it.
Or you don't like it. Either way, just
do it.
Throw us a bone, you know. All right, go Sox. Cap Figure, thank you.
Peace. History repeats itself. Try it.